Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
All right, back here on OMF, we continue to do this program in different locations so that we do it as safely as we possibly can. And we hope that you are socially distancing as well, as some of the numbers are starting to look a little bit better. A couple weeks ago, we talked to Dr. Christopher Rowley, an infectious disease physician over at Beth Israel, and he's been kind enough to join us again today to give us an update because we really don't know what we're talking about. Dr. Rowley, thanks for joining us again. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So you tell us, we're watching all of these numbers, statistics, and their medical people who are giving them to us, and we know about flattening the curve. I think we've figured that all out. And though we're seeing a lot of deaths every single day, especially from some of the hotspots, they're telling us that the numbers are looking better in flattening the curve. Could you kind of dissect that and explain to us, are we seeing better numbers right now? Are you encouraged?
It's really challenging to know where we are still. I would say the reason why we should be encouraged is the model that is being cited by Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx is a model that's being generated out of the Institute in Seattle, where they are taking real data and entering it into an ever-changing model and giving us updates basically day to day with estimates about how many people are likely to die of this in the United States. And over the last week, we've gone from rather dire predictions of, you know, potentially 100 to 250,000 deaths to now, as of today, maybe it'll only be, well, I say only, as horrific as it is, it'll only be 60,000 deaths in the United States. And so I think there's challenges when you're modeling because you're trying to do, it's like a weather forecast. You're trying to take the best information you have and apply it to a very, very uncertain reality. But it is certainly encouraging. I would say when you think about Massachusetts, we're still not there yet. We're still about a week to 10 days, perhaps, away from hitting our peak. And the challenge there is, you don't know you've hit the peak until things start to get better. And so we are prepared and we are still obviously testing people, still diagnosing a coronavirus and getting ready for the surge, which we know is coming. And then after that, we'll have a much better sense of where we are.
So, Doctor, recently, and I'd say in the last week, there's been some discussion, and we've heard him address it at night too, how they're classifying deaths. And we were saying, you know, are there people, you know, dying because of COVID-19? Are there people dying with COVID-19? And there is a difference. When you hear some of those numbers, how would you look at how they're classifying it?
I think it's challenging in situations such as New York City, where the number of EMS calls for individuals who are dying of cardiac arrest are far higher than they've been year to year. And so it's presumed that those individuals have died of COVID-19, but it may never be proven. Whereas, you know, here, if you're infected with COVID-19 and we have the ability to do an assessment, if you develop renal failure and you ultimately die of your kidney failure, still the inciting event was the COVID-19. So we would attribute that death to COVID-19. I think where you're going to lose some of the numbers are those people who have unexplained deaths. And the presumption being that they died of COVID-19, but it'll never be proven. I think the goal here and what we're trying to do here is both determine who is infected, and then if that death happens when they're infected, then we would attribute it to COVID-19.
Do you think that it's fair Because we talk about this a lot, that, you know, we feel like the medical profession, the doctors and the, you know, and the experts want zero deaths and they want this thing eradicated. So they don't want anything to go back to normal until it's safe to go back into the water. Do you think that's something that's realistic? That, you know, okay, nobody goes, we don't go back to normal until the fear is completely wiped out? Or don't you kind of have to live with some, I don't know, unknown that, you know, you could be, you know, at risk?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's nothing easy about what we're all doing right now. There's nothing easy about restrictions, and they're challenging for everybody, for schools, for the economy. But when I mentioned those models earlier, what it gets kind of lost in translation, I think, is that even when it's being talked about on the national stage, those models suggest actual social or physical distancing at least until the end of May. And we're not even discussing that when we talk about our own social distancing here. So if you play that forward and say, we're actually going to have to extend the social distancing another month, that's going to be even more excruciating. I think what we need to come up with is some plan for how we emerge from this. But I think particularly here in Massachusetts, where we're still 10 days away from seeing the worst of it, it's really hard to see how that's going to play out. But I totally agree. We need to be thinking about that. It's just whether we're going to have a second wave that happens in June because we let go of restrictions too soon, or whether we have the second wave, which happens, you know, when flu season typically happens in the fall, which I think is a lot more that people are anticipating to happen if we have, you know, enough of the social restrictions going forward.
We're talking with Dr. Christopher Rowley over at Beth Israel Hospital. So there's no vaccine, and there may not be a vaccine for 12 to 18 months. So we're seeing some desperation out there for a remedy, especially those that are hospitalized and in bad shape right now. And we've developed a controversy out of it with the hydroxychloroquine. Dr. Oz has been on TV. Trump obviously has talked about how the federal government has secured a lot of this stuff, and it's become very politicized. How would you look at a drug like this that in the past has been directed towards malaria? It's been approved by the FDA for a long period of time. Maybe there are some side effects to all of this, but would you as a doctor, or if I'm a patient and my doctor prescribed it, should I go along with it and take it?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've been dealing with that here and with all the institutions who, you know, we share protocols and try to figure out how we deal with medications. In particular, hydroxychloroquine, the reason why that's so attractive is because it's a medication that we've all seen used before. We do know that it has side effects, but we generally know what they are, and we know what type of patient we need to be very concerned about
using
that.
Is it heart patients? Is that one of the patients?
Right. In particular, they can have some changes in their EKG, which can lead to trouble. And so that type of medication is very appealing because it's being used what we call off-label. It has another indication. It's used often for people with lupus or perhaps with arthritis, but we can use it for another reason, and we don't have to go through all of the labor-intensive process of getting it approved for that indication. We can use it as physicians for that other purpose. And so in this case, people are doing it, and people are trying to see if it works, because it is really incredibly challenging not to have anything to offer. And there's some kind of studies, which they refer to as anecdotal studies, that it may work. But when you look a little bit harder at the data, there's a lot of data which says it actually doesn't work. And so while you're seeing individual practitioners prescribing it, monitoring closely for side effects, and in many cases the person does fine with respect to not having any intolerances to the medication, the proof that it works is just not there. And so at the same time, while individual practitioners are using this medication, and doing it carefully, there are studies going on here in Boston to prove whether it works or not. So you'll receive the medication, or you'll receive a placebo, and we'll know.
But we have to wait, doctor, for a period of time before that trial is done. So it's become a controversy right now. If somebody is in real bad shape and a doctor recommends it, is there an issue there?
That what you're describing is being done as well. So clinically, providers throughout the country are prescribing it and monitoring closely, and maybe the individual is getting better from the medication, maybe they're getting better on their own, or maybe they're not getting better. So that's being done routinely right now.
So, Doc, are we just a little delusional? You know, and be honest, okay? Be honest.
You are. But,
you know, because you're sitting here telling me, you know, the peak is in Massachusetts isn't going to be for like another 10 days. They also were talking about, you know, at the end of May, that's when you really need to stop, you know, you can get back to somewhat of a normal routine. You know, we're talking about college football. We're talking about pro football, baseball, NBA, hockey, all these different pro sports trying to get back to normal. And every time I talk to another expert like yourself, I think I get more, like I get hit with a dose of reality that I'm delusional because it's just not going to be possible. Because if nothing can happen till the end of May, then the calendar gets so screwed up, then teams need to ramp up, they need to get ready, scheduling needs to be, you know, put in place. Are we all just nuts thinking that this is possible?
I saw the similar question being raised to Dr. Fauci yesterday, and it's really hard to imagine when you have this peak. It doesn't go down to nothing afterwards. Then there's a tail on the backside of it. So really, if you're thinking about when it ends, if we maintain the restrictions that we're doing now, we are talking about getting into the early part of June before maybe we emerge from this in somewhat normal life. But remember, the one great thing about this country is it's so diverse, but the same thing is we're not doing this everywhere. And so if you have done it here on the East Coast and you've done it on the West Coast and multiple places in between, what about when you decide to have your sporting event in Missouri where they're not doing that? I mean, and so by not doing it nationally at the same time, we're probably going to have differences in when people are hitting their peaks. And so that's going to add more to the challenge, particularly when you think of sports teams traveling the country and things like that.
Doc, what about when you hear stories about, you know, Major League Baseball sitting there saying, okay, you know, at some point, whether it's June or so, we put 1,500 people in a bubble out in Arizona, and we try to play games without fans, and we monitor it. When you hear these leagues trying to put things like this together, putting people in a bubble, does it even seem possible?
I think it's hard for me to imagine that scenario, but there is a time period by which if you don't develop symptoms, whether it be 2 weeks or whether it be, you know, 4 weeks in an area where no new infection has been introduced, that you're going to be out of that window. So I think all of that potentially could be done, but it's going to be somebody other than me thinking about how to make that happen.
So when you're talking about could come back on, you know, in the normal flu season, if we get through this in June, July, August, are we back in it again in December, January, February?
You know, I don't think we know. The things we talked a little bit about a couple of weeks ago, and one of you raised it, we don't know what the antibody development means. If we get exposed now, are you okay come September to be exposed to it and you'll have no ill effects? I mean, we certainly hope that the antibody would be protective. And so, you know, there could be a certain group of people who have developed antibody and then are able to go about the normal life, you know, not worrying about it. But then if we return to, like, worldwide travel again and places around the world are still dealing with this, you know, we'll run into the same issues that we have here. There's not a great sense right now that summer is going to make it go away completely, like we usually see happen with influenza. But there's a hope that it would be lessened. But that data they're not there yet either.
We're talking again with Dr. Christopher Rowley here on the Harbor One Hotline over at Beth Israel Hospital. Yesterday, for the first time, Dr. Fauci was talking about looking at the numbers again, the statistics, and that there are far more, when you're looking at a scale now, far more African-Americans who are being hospitalized and are dying than other races. When you look at something like that, do you have any idea why that would be happening right now? Does it have something to do with the care in various areas of the country, or could it be directly tied in with somebody's race?
The tying in with the race, I think, is a really tricky question, because I don't think we have any evidence whatsoever that African Americans would be more susceptible to the virus. But what is absolutely true, and it's been revealed over and over in the past few years, is the disparity in care that African Americans receive. Right. And whether it be in addressing their underlying medical conditions, such as diabetes or heart disease, or the rates of maternal mortalities in women when they're giving birth. So, you know, maybe if there's a good thing that comes out of this, is it will really focus on the disparity of care that's being given to African Americans.
Last one for me, Doc. The I don't know. The NBA came up and yesterday they were talking about how they're working with the players union. The NBA and the NBA players union are working together to, and they didn't even name this device, but they said there's something where it's almost like a one touch, right? Where you, for diabetics, where you prick your finger, you put it into your one touch, and it gives you your blood glucose meter, right? But they could do the same thing with the coronavirus. And if they do this whole biodome situation, whether it's for baseball or basketball, that would be a good way to make sure everybody's safe in quickly instead of waiting. Have you heard anything about that, like a quick one-touch type of coronavirus test?
Yeah, there is a test, which if it's positive, it takes about 5 minutes before you get the result. And if it's negative, it takes a little longer, closer to 15 minutes. But absolutely, it's available and it's legit. It works very, very well. And the company that's making them is slowly ramping up their production to distribute them around the country. So yes, you could.
So real quick, I know the testing that I've seen is they stick the thing up your nose way down deep into your nostril area, like it looks really uncomfortable. But this one seems like a lot more more pleasant.
I'm sorry. Yeah, let me clarify that. The one that I've seen actually is, again, a nasopharyngeal swab, one of those swabs that goes into the back of your nose. What people are working on now is blood tests for serologies to work on the antibodies. But if somebody is actively infected and you're worried about they have active coronavirus disease, we still believe that nasopharyngeal swab is probably the best sample to get.
Doc, you've been great, as always, and hopefully we can do it again. Maybe in a few weeks we won't have to worry about talking about this, but again, we really appreciate you educating us and giving us the latest. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.